Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. I'm internet funny man Blake Buck, and I'm joined this week by Justin Fick.
What's going on, Blake Buck?
Oh, and I keep forgetting your fame of indie development fame.
I have many fames now.
That's true. How is your indie? You got to give us like a weekly update. I know you got a build for me, but I hadn't played it yet.
Okay, yeah, it's last like 48 hours or so, I've made a ton of progress on it. So,
you got some art heat in there?
Yeah, some art heat. Zap Brannigan of former album Art Fame is—he's busting some ass, and he's really good too. He's throwing in some cool sprites, and
you know, I remember the humble days when Zap Brannigan was just limited to album art, and now look at
him—he's blossomed into a fine young man. but yeah, so this build that we got, it's up on the Dropbox for you now, Blake Buck, and I'm gonna probably make it public sometime this weekend.
Uh-oh.
By the time this comes out, you'll be able to grab it, like, maybe from the BDPE forums or
yeah.
something.
Or do you want to put it... I can stick it in the show notes, too. Do you want me to do that, too? Or maybe not. Maybe a little more exclusive. Got to be in the club. All right.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll do it for forum members first.
Okay.
And then, plus gives me, like, a little extra time to brush some stuff up for its debut. But, right now, there's no win or loss condition yet. But you're like a little Bruce Lee character. You can run and jump around. There's dudes you can punch, and there's blood, there's guts, there's like some chop suey sound effects or special moves you can link together.
Man.
So nice. It's fun shit. Like I've been working a lot on it the last 48 hours, and I can't stop playing it. So really excited about it.
Justin, you should try sleeping some.
I don't do that anymore. It's very strange.
I find that if you keep drinking, you don't have to sleep anymore.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Maintain your momentum. I know sleep. Sleep is what you do when you like fall out of your computer chair and sort of like with your face like face down on the couch and the rest of your body hanging out on the ground for like 4 hours. I remember that stuff.
anyway, if you want to check it out, maybe this is a good point. People, I forget. There's a lot of people that listen. There's a good number of people in the forums, but you might want to go check it out. Best damn podcast ever. I think it's / forum, or just click the forum button, whatever. Get signed up, and maybe you too can join in on the fun.
Yeah, and the game is called Kung Fu Kill Force.
Which, what's not to like?
Exactly. So it's a little more than 2 months left in the contest. So really, really happy with how it's coming along. Gonna add some scoring system in there next, and all that good shite.
All right, well, this is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2011. All right, Justin, kick us off. What you got for us?
All right, so first up is actually kind of a bombshell for Nintendo, they have slashed their 3DS prices by $80.
Damn!
So, launched at $250, it is now $169 in North America.
That is easily the fastest and most significant price drop, I would say, in Nintendo history.
Yeah, that's a nosedive as far as Nintendo goes, and they've never had a drop like this before.
How did this happen? I mean, it seems, I know Nintendo's not, you know, doing like they were 2 years ago, but this seems like a drastic, drastic move.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is. Like, it's just not selling the way they want it to. And, you know, like, it's a weak launch. It is kind of a gimmick of a unique selling point. And
right.
it's one that not everyone likes. So, I don't know, it's... And there's really no, you know, there's no games been made for it yet. I mean, one could argue that Ocarina of Time is the first one, but it's not even a new game.
Yeah, and that game came out, it just came out, maybe 3 weeks ago? It wasn't even a launch title, so.
Nah, yeah.
I think what they probably did was looked after Ocarina, they thought maybe Ocarina would ship units, and it didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what would happen.
I mean, you know, Ocarina almost made me want to buy one, and then the price drop almost makes me want to buy one. But the thing is, I haven't bought one. You know, I'm kind of pulled in that direction just because I know that this is the DS now. This is where it's going, so you might as well. But nothing's really reaching out and grabbing me by the nuts yet. Like, it's just, you know, it's like I could have a 3DS.
That's how Joseph quantifies what is good. If it grabs his nuts or not.
Yeah. He's gonna reach out into my shorts and grab my nuts.
I can just see you at like the ice cream store. You know, there's children all around. Well, I don't know which one's grabbing my nuts or not.
Mint chocolate chip nuts. Oh, cookies and cream is grabbing my nuts.
I guess this would, it says here, I think I read in the news where it's like a 30% reduction in its price.
It's down by over a third, just under a third in North America, 40% in Japan, and about 30% drop in Australia to $250 Australian.
Which I believe their currency is dingoes, if I'm not mistaken.
Dingo. So, in North America, these are going to hit August 12th. So...
Didn't Nintendo stock like take a big hit right when this happened too?
With a drop, I haven't paid attention to their stock, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, let's see. Shares are down 12% after this is a story coming up, but it's sort of the same thing. After the drop, shares went down 12%. 12.
Jesus,
that's massive.
That's like Miyamoto jumping out of a building. That's harsh. So I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, back in the day, this must have been like 15, 20 episodes ago. But you know, I was even saying like Nintendo's kind of on a sinking ship right now. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The 3DS, like, I like it and I want to buy it and I want to like it, but I don't have to have it, so I don't go get it.
I'm telling you, this is Nintendo is in like the I don't know, like. Basically, Nintendo is me. They graduated college and that went good, but now they're stuck living at home with their parents. They got to figure something out soon, or the shit's gonna hit the fan.
Actually, Nintendo kind of reminds me of like a samurai in the middle of a war with like lasers and bombs and shit. Like, you know, like they're kind of like the old school way of doing it, and they're kind of going the way of the dodo. I think, I don't know. So.
Well, I wouldn't count them down and out just yet, but
they're gonna put up a fight in the way out, and Nintendo's proven even with you know the previous generation that they can work from that underdog spot really well,
right?
So I don't think they're ever gonna go away, but
surely, but they might. I mean, I don't know I keep forgetting the stupid name of it. The Wii U. That's it. Mm-hmm. Oh, so dumb.
Yeah. The thing is, like, unless that really takes off, I don't really see a future for Nintendo.
Like, the 3DS, they could do a rev of the 3DS next spring, and the titles will finally be on the 3DS, and it will really take off for me. I feel like that will happen.
Yeah, but. The original DS did that. Like, I hated the DS when it came out. It had shit games. Like, it hurt my hands, and just, like, you know, like, they revved it, the DS Lite came out, all those awesome games came out for it, and the DS Lite became one of my favorite systems in a very long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I'm not counting it out yet, but, I mean, they have to survive past this and the Wii U first.
So, to build on this, Justin Fick, oh, shit. Hang on. I'm just in my levels.
Before you segue, there's actually a one more little juicy bit. If you already bought a 3DS and you're kind of pissed that you could have paid $80 less for it, Nintendo is going to give you 20 free Game Boy Advance and NES virtual console games to your account.
That's pretty cool. So, how much are those? I think... That they're what about eight, maybe $5-$10 each?
Yeah.
So that's a pretty sweet deal.
So yeah, if you've already bought a 3DS, you're gonna get hooked up.
How many did you say you get?
20.
Damn, because yeah, let's say I think they're about $8 or something, but 20, that's a pretty significant hell. I mean, if you were to buy all that many, that would be like twice that amount of money, potentially. Yeah. If I knew the numbers.
Some of these are, you know, I mean, like Metroid Fusion's in that list that you can pick from. And a lot of these are games that are not going on Virtual Console after that.
Hmm.
So some of these are, you know, like, for instance, Metroid Fusion is one you can only get through this program.
Weird. So, why would they do that?
Maybe it's a reason for you to spend $250 on a 3DS now.
Oh, you lagged out. I couldn't hear what you said.
Maybe it's a reason for you to go out now and spend $250 on a 3DS.
Well, if they've already dropped it, it doesn't seem like you could get in on this now.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
That is a sweet deal. I think you'd still get in on that.
It does say existing 3DS owners. I mean, who knows?
Okay, but they'll probably run it for a few weeks then to try and entice people to buy it too. So
yeah,
that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, because like if they didn't, you know, extend it to people who buy it between now and August 12th, who the hell would buy a 3DS in their right mind?
Right.
You know, so this they're gonna see abysmal sales for the next couple weeks before this price drop kicks in.
Oh wait, so the price drop hasn't happened yet?
No, it's gonna happen August 12th.
Really? That's a strange thing, because usually when you announce price drops, they're immediate, so you don't have this awful limbo period. Well, I guess it's only what? That's about a week and a half, two weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
So not so bad. Still strange. Anyway, moving on to some related news. Nintendo president takes 50% pay cut. So what's his first name? Iwata?
Satoru.
Satoru, that's right. Satoru Iwata and the board of directors volunteered to trim their salaries to show accountability for the four financials as predecessor. Oh, wait, I'll get to the second thing in a second. But so basically to show that they're like, well, we're trying to, you know, recoup losses and we're in the fight with you, gang, even though all of these guys are millionaires living in.
We've taken a 50% pay cut on our $5 million salary.
Well, even then, their salaries usually aren't what they make all the money from. It's their stock options and stuff that just go, which I guess aren't great right now if they're down 12%.
Yeah, no, that isn't good either.
Damn it, there went 12% of my summer home. But let's see, so it's going to be some of their board of directors and... here's the other thing I really thought was fascinating about this, because this is, I mean, it's really kind of a silly thing. It's just so they get another bullet point trying to calm investors. But... the big news I thought about this was Bloomberg News reports that former Nintendo president Hiroshi Yamauchi, which I'll just add, who is a samurai.
Yeah, I think they're all samurai.
Dude, he was crazy. He's the one that kicks Square out of Nintendo and, like, doesn't play video games and thinks they're all stupid. And, like, you can read all about, like, you know, Yamauchi and Iwata in that Game Over. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, but Game Over, Press Start to Continue, which is this book that sort of sums up that whole 80s when Nintendo resurged. Anyway, he stands to lose as much as $300 million after their recent financial reports. $300 million.
I'm telling you. Well, I mean, it's kind of funny. So, I mean, you know, like, think he lost $300 million. The stock went down, what, 12%? So, like, one-eighth? Mm-hmm. So, this dude has $2.5 billion of stock in Nintendo.
Oh, my God.
$2.5 billion.
You know what happened, right? They didn't want to cut their salaries, but Yamauchi was like, either you cut your salaries, I will cut you in half. And you know, no, I got the perfect thing. I could just see Yamauchi writing, because he was old when he ran Nintendo. I could just see him like going around in his business suit, trying to figure out, solve the mystery like Matlock of where his money went. All right, kids. We'll get this one solved. I'll take my guitar, my cigar, and my hatred for role-playing games, and we'll get it done together. I love the Matlock theme. Oh, that's really all I'm getting at.
It's those bastards at Square the whole time.
Yeah.
Those dirty rats.
He's getting in a fight with, like, Kaz Harai. You whippersnapper don't know what's going on.
Oh. Now, see, I had a totally different image of him. I had an image of him as, like, the aging Kung Fu master, like Shang Tsung from fucking Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, right. Wait. Coming this fall. I'm just going to keep that last little bit and use it whenever we transition news stories. So, Justin Fick, I think that's the end of that news story. Oh, no, that's the wrong button. Wait, wait. That's our voicemail. Justin Fick, that's the end of that news story. What you got for us now?
I don't even know anymore. All right, hold on. I got it. So, something, you know, a little bit's looking up for Nintendo. So, Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D has sold a million copies. So, that's pretty much one out of every four 3DS systems out there.
Yes.
Now has Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D.
Honestly, it seems like they would have sold more. How many? You said there's 4 million out there? It seems like they would have sold more with such a huge...
I don't know. I mean, that's one quarter of your entire install base. That's pretty damn good.
I guess that's true.
That's pretty damn good. So, yeah, it's 1.08 million copies of Ocarina of Time and 4.32 million 3DS units. So, yeah, exactly one out of every four. So, yeah, let's see. It's not the best-selling title. So, for instance, they've sold 1.2 million copies of Mario Kart Wii, DS versions of Pokemon Black and White, combining for 1.3 million copies.
Wait, Mario Kart Wii? You mean Mario Kart 3DS? Wait, that's not even out yet.
For the Wii, I mean, it's not their best-selling title in their company. In Nintendo, okay. But it's the best-selling title on the 3DS by far.
Right. Okay. That's like, cause, yeah, isn't Mario Kart coming out this fall on the 3DS?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming out later this year.
Okay. So, it seems good, but yeah, these are considering it's a huge Nintendo franchise, you know, they were probably hoping this would be the system mover, and it doesn't, I mean, doesn't look like it is. So.
I mean, it almost moved it for me, personally. Like that came out, and I was like, you know what, like, I kind of do want to play through Ocarina again. But then I realized I have two versions of it already on various discs in my house.
Yeah. So. Especially, oh man, you know that they had that re-release they did on the Wii, or on the GameCube? That was, man.
Is it the Master Quest, or is it the one with the...
Well, they made one that was like Master Quest, but then they made one that was a compilation of... Oh, what was it? Yeah, it was like four or five different Zelda games?
Yeah, I think was it all of them except Link to the Past?
Yeah, I think it was. Well, the Game Boy ones, too.
Okay.
It was 1-2, Majora's Mask, and 64. Ocarina. I think that was like a promo disc or something. I don't know how I got it, but, dude, that's it.
I've got the Master Quest, and I kind of want to go through that again.
I still think Majora's Mask is the coolest game in the franchise.
Actually, I know that, you know, me too.
Because, like... Everybody says it's the classic, you know, but Majora's Mask was so weird. Had all this.
It took a long time for me to get into it, and then even when I finished it, I was like, okay, that was weird. But you know, I look back at Majora's Mask, and it's just like that was a cool ass fucking game.
Especially compared to the Zelda titles they've put out since then, which have been mostly like, hey, how about Majora's Mask again? More or less, or not Majora's Mask, but you know,
Ocarina
again. And I guess Wind Waker was. A little out there, but compared to Majora's Mask, it just had this. Well, I guess Wind Waker had a bizarre art style too, but it was definitely. I would say it's the darkest Zelda game that's ever been made.
Yeah, and I like the style of Wind Waker a lot too, but I don't know. It's just like the whole game at the end kind of stunk of there should have been a little more. I don't know. Did you get that at all? I mean, it kind of felt like there were dungeons that could have been there and weren't.
Well, if my memory serves me right, oh no, I'm thinking of Master Quest that had the disk drive. I was thinking that Majora's Mask never had any disk drive functionality. I don't think, did it? I don't think so. I think I'm making that up.
Not that I remember.
But yeah, it was a little shorter. But I feel like the whole it felt shorter because it had less dungeons. I think it only had 8 dungeons as opposed to Majora's Mask, like first 4, and then I think it was 8 after that. So I think it had a total of 12 in Ocarina of Time. Maybe it was more than that. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it might have been a hair shorter.
I think the other thing about Wind Waker is that for a major Zelda title like that, like, they were kind of cock-teasing the whole time about that second world. You know, like, when you go down, like, under the water and there's Hyrule completely sunken, you know, and then you have the overworld that's completely flooded and it's all water and islands. Like, the whole time I was like, oh my God.
Spoiler alert, Justin Fick. Somebody went, no!
Well, it's a spoiler, but at this point, it's like, come on.
The game came out 10 years ago.
Yeah, so, you know, like the whole time, I was like, oh my God. So, at some point, I'm going to get some awesome weapon or, like, Master Sword or something, and all the water is going to go down the world. It's going to be a massive fucking Hyrule overworld, and it never happened.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, because certainly that's sort of a staple of Zelda's, where you get the two worlds. That was in, I can't remember, but Link's Awakening had that, and even, what's it called to an extent, the most recent one, Twilight Princess kind of had that, didn't it, a little bit? With, like, the dark and the light world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Link to the Past was the first one that did it formally, but you could argue that even the original Zelda had two, with the first quest and the second quest.
Mm, that's true.
So, but, you know, Link to the Past was the first one that really did that.
You know, I want to move on. All right. And that's it for that news story. No, I promise I'm not going to do it anymore.
And that's the end of us using that bit.
All right. Ubisoft calls Always On DRM a success. So despite foul-ups and inconvenience for users, publisher insists that requiring internet connection to its servers has produced a clear reduction in piracy. So I guess I didn't even realize this was happening. I mean, I knew they had, like, you know, some DRM stuff, but apparently with Ubisoft's games, you have to be connected to them all the time.
Yeah.
Is that basically what this means?
Pretty much. Yeah,
to run even in single-player mode, the game must be connected to the internet constantly. Man, even if you boot it up, you, like, unplug it, oh, you're boned. Get out.
So, I mean, this one seems kind of polarizing to me, because on one hand, it's like, you know, yeah, it's a success because it has a clear reduction in piracy, probably on paper, but how many people are you pissing off to do that?
Right. Ubisoft first introduced the always-on DRM scheme several years ago, using titles like Silent Hunter 5, what? Settlers 7, and Assassin's Creed 2. However, after a denial of service attacks brought the game servers down and rendered them temporarily unplayable to legitimate customers, publisher began to rethink its stance. Ubisoft subsequently relaxed the DRM on Assassin's Creed 2 and Splinter Cell Conviction, opted not to use it for titles like Ruse and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. So apparently there's been some problems, and again, there are two sides of this coin, but if there's, who is this who said this? According to a representative in PC Game, they said to PC Gamer, they've seen a, quote, clear reduction in piracy for our titles, which require persistent online connection, and from that point of view, the requirement is a success.
Yeah, but this always cheeses me about DRM, too. It's, you know, it's, yeah, you're seeing less piracy, but you're also pissing off your legitimate players. I mean, you know, and I guess if you're a big company like this, you kind of have to do it, but I don't know, a lot of games now are, especially on the PC anyway, are going completely DRM free, you know, and, now, you know, it, like, not in games, but, like, for instance, Bandcamp for music, and things like the Humble Indie Bundle for games, they, you know, it's like they are very loudly advertising that there is no DRM, and they do phenomenally.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hate to play devil's advocate here, Justin Fick, but at the same time, first of all, let me ask you, how does Steam work? Because I thought that Steam, you had to be on the internet, and I bought, dude, they had this deal, you're too late, Jank of the Week, but they had
this is your Jank of last week.
Yeah, Jank last week was, or weekend anyway, was Civ 5 for like $17 on Steam. So I got that tape, but then I didn't have internet, because I don't want to tell you what I was doing this weekend, but I didn't have internet. But it still worked, and I don't know how exactly they do, like, because I know that maybe you have to connect to the internet every couple of days, or you get like a, you know,
I think it's something like that.
Like, if you go more than a week, you can't play anymore. But it seems like that's a pretty good system. I don't know if it's quite as effective as 100% you have to be online all the time. In fact, I'm sure it isn't. I'm sure there's probably some bootleg, some hackers either has built or is working on right now. Mm-hmm. But still.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's like if you've downloaded it online, which on Steam you have done. But with, you know, if you buy a disc for, you know, for an Xbox or something, you might not necessarily be doing, right. You know, it's very reasonable to assume that you're going online once a week or once every couple days.
Yeah. You know,
but forcing to be online at all times, it's a little severe.
Well, I think though, but at the same time, you know, I hate to always be taking the other side, but who doesn't have internet connection all the time these days? Who's playing, you know, what is
it? Apparently you last week.
Dude, I was staying at this girl's house. I got bit by these spiders. I had to go to the hospital. It was a bad week. I've still got a whole tube of spider pills I gotta take. Anyway,
now the spiders, because of the girl, they spawn from her, or are these two separate events?
Just she lives in this shit house, and it's like I don't want to get into it.
Because yeah, just in the way you're making it sound, like this is some sort of like spider queen or something.
No, not that bad. But I don't know. I mean, it seems reasonable to assume you have internet, especially if you're most of these games. I don't know. I wonder what percentage. I guess you could do a survey or something, but I wonder what percentage of PC games at least are bought online versus on any of the marketplaces versus purchased in the store. I bet it would be, if I had to guess, it would be half and half at least, if not higher, for digital distribution.
I would say closer to, like, for the people who, you know, are gamers anyway, I would say it would be closer to like 80-90% online. Yeah,
maybe so. I mean, I guess somebody's probably done a survey, but it seems like, you know, this is not unreasonable to be like, hey, you're probably connected to the internet, and if we do this, people don't rob us. I don't understand why people are like, oh, I can make up all these bullshit reasons that stealing games is okay. You're like, stealing a game is stealing a game, right? That is wrong. I don't understand why people always trip around like, oh, well, it's not really stealing and blah, 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 and all the companies and blue. I mean, why? It's good to protect other people's creative work. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but on the other hand, it's, you know, you try too hard to protect it, and you start treating your customers like potential thieves, and the things like that insults people. And the thing is, the people who are stealing your game, they're gonna steal your game somehow anyway. It's, you know, like, if you look at this, you know, it says that it's had a clear reduction in piracy, not eliminations. People are still stealing this game.
No, and we've said this. I've said this before, Justin Fick. Like, you're not trying to stop, you know, Hacker Pirate 2011. All right, you're never gonna stop that guy. What you're never gonna stop
GeoHot.
You're never gonna get that guy. I can think of one person who might can stop him. No more of that. Anyway, but now I've lost my whole train of thought. Let's just hire Matlock to stop all piracy. Oh, God. What the fuck was I even saying? Okay. You're just trying to prevent casual piracy. You're trying to prevent, you know, Ted and, you know, the dorm room. That's what most piracy is. It's not hackers. It's just your casual dude who looks up a little bit. If you can stop that guy from stealing, then you can make money off of him, right? That's good. I don't see why people are just always like, oh, I'm entitled to everything. Oh, I buy a game. I should be able to do whatever I want with it. Well, what? Fuck you.
I'm with you there. Like, you know, people make a game, they should be able to get paid for it.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I do agree that the casual pirates are, you know, the majority of people who are buying this stuff.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, like, if somebody were to say, like, hey, man, you know what sucks? Having to go to a voting center and wait in line to vote. Everybody, I mean, the people going to cheat are going to cheat anyway, right? I'm honest. Why don't we just vote at home and then on the internet? You see what I'm saying? Like, you have to take, sometimes you have to take certain extra steps to make sure that things are done like they should be.
Mm-hmm. And so, I'm just arguing that this might be too many steps.
Maybe. It's debatable. It's a gray area. Anyway, I'm not going to play it again. Let's move on to the next news story, Jessica. What have you got for us?
All right. So right now, it'll be over by the time this comes out, but at this moment, Evo 2011 is happening in Las Vegas, Nevada. So for those that don't know, Evo is the probably, if not the biggest, it's one of the biggest fighting game tournaments in the country. It's happening at the Rio Hotel in Las Vegas right now.
Nice.
If you go back in time to when we were recording this podcast, you can go jump on a live stream. I've actually been watching it all day. It's really addicting. And you can watch, you know, some of the top tier competitive players for Street Fighter 4, Tekken 6, Mortal Kombat 9, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Blaze Blue, Continuum, Shift. So they're all duking it out today, tomorrow, and Sunday. So I guess by the time you listen to this, you can go and look at the results. But yeah, like I was watching the the qualifiers freaking all morning for Street Fighter IV Arcade Edition, and it is addicting to watch. They have great commentators.
Now, how does it work? How does one like get into one of these tournaments? Do you have to like prove yourself in some online thing first, and then you can go to the qualifying, or can just anybody show up?
I think you can just show up. I'm pretty sure there might be an entry fee or something, and I know that there are satellite tournaments that they've mentioned that some people have won tournaments and won a ticket to Evo. Maybe that's like plane flight, whatever. But like I know there were a lot of locals in there just showing up. Mm-hmm. So, and it's kind of a shame because I was trying to be in Vegas for this weekend through next weekend.
Oh, damn.
Didn't end up getting the ticket, but I could have fucking went to this. I would have gotten spanked like a bitch, but I mean, these guys are fucking good too. Like you watch this and you listen to the commentators and listen to all the things that they're talking about. It's like Street Fighter is fucking intense, dude.
It seems like the scene has always existed, and they've been doing these conventions. I mean, Evo itself has been around since what? The early 90s, maybe?
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
It just seems so strange that there's just this. I mean, I guess not. If you're so into fighting games, then why would you not do this? But, man, like, I don't know, read a book or something in your spare time.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, this is such, you know, fighting games have become so well designed. It's a lot like, you know, real time strategy where, you know, the best play can be competitive against other people. You know, it's actually really admirable from a game design standpoint. I mean, it's kind of like a crown jewel. Like if you can make a game like this that is played competitively by this
many
people.
Why do you think that some games get selected? I mean, because I'm sure they got a variety of games, but there are a handful of games that are like, oh, these are the games we're playing. These are the games, right? I wonder what determines, you know, because, I don't know, what's a fighting game that's probably not being showcased there?
There's no Guilty Gears there, for instance.
Right. Well, is it BlazBlue, sort of the continuation of Guilty Gear? I don't know.
I think so.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, how come Street Fighter is so big and Guilty Gear isn't? You know, does it boil down to design?
I think it's a little bit design. I think it's a little bit just popularity. Mm-hmm. You know, if Guilty Gear is a better game than Street Fighter 4, I don't know if it is or not. I mean, it depends on what type of gamer you are. But, you know, I mean, Street Fighter is the bigger name.
Well, even though, what about like Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe? Remember that game came out about 2 years ago? I bet fucking nobody's playing that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They are?
No, so I bet nobody's playing
that. Oh, okay. Right. It's like, I wonder why, you know, this new... Well, I guess it's because it's a better game. I guess that would make sense.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, for games like RTSs and fighting games, the popularity of it and the longevity of it does depend entirely on design. So, you know, even though Street Fighter IV is a big name... Like, it's still up there because it's designed so tightly that you really can't break it. Like, it remains fun, and people find out new strategies, and, you know, and there's a metagame that shifts around. Like, you know, once you have, like, this perfectly designed game, those things kind of, you know, just erupt from it.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised, you know, I'm not surprised, I'm a little surprised to see Mortal Kombat 9 up there because I wasn't expecting that to be that well designed of a game.
It's got just as big of a following as Street Fighter these days, from what I hear. But I'm thinking I'm not in this circle. I'll look up. It seems like we could maybe find one of these Evo guys, come talk to us about this whole. Or if anybody, any of the listeners, I mean, surely somebody out there is like an expert on fighting games. I want to know like the nuances to this kind of stuff. So. Maybe we can. I'll do a little Google and see if I can dig somebody up to get on as a guest.
Okay.
And explain to us the evolution of competitive fighting.
Yeah, I might know people too. Like they're not, maybe not top tier guys, but you know, people who go to tournaments and play competitively. And
yeah,
I know a little bit about what's going on, but you know, just a lot of the nuance, a lot of like the, you know, measuring pixels and frames and, you know, just all the different mechanics that go in, both ones that are specifically designed and ones that just sort of evolve out of it. Like, you know, you see a lot of people playing the game of footsie in Street Fighter 4, and that's all footsie. Just footsie. And for instance, this is all just trying to get the perfect range for their character. I mean, certain characters have, they have different ranges. So what they do is they sit there and they kind of sweep at each other to measure out that range. And it looks like they're playing footsie.
You know what I call footsie when I'm playing fighting games? That's when I hold down and hit kick over and over, and I say, "Bring it, bitch." Can't get past this.
I mean, that's kind of what they do. They kind of like inch forward. They'll like sweep at each other, and they'll.
Mine's just like don't come. It's like doing Blanca zap forever. Don't come touch me. That's my strategy.
That beat me online. I have no idea how to get through that shit. I suck so bad at these.
Well, you gotta either have like a low projectile or time it better. Like it is for a beginning level player. It's pretty good. I mean, even if it's like computers, like I'll be like, all right, I'm doing pretty good at Mortal Kombat, and then it turns into, all right, down and A. Got this.
Well, because the thing is, I play Rufus, so he's got no projectiles. So I have to find a way to get the fuck in there and jab you out of it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's like it's cool to watch too. And you know, just there are so many characters that are played competitively. I mean, at least in the qualifying rounds anyway, I was seeing like, you know, people that consider some characters to be bottom tier. Like in Street Fighter, like Dan and Vega are very bottom tier characters.
Oh yeah, didn't they even like design Dan as like for pro players to show how good they are with
kinda. Like, Dan is kinda funny. So Dan is a poke at SNK. I think it's the King of Fighters series, so you know, King of Fighters kinda ripped off.
Right,
you
know, they got that orange Ken, basically.
Yeah. Capcom made this character Dan that you know is it looks like the SNK characters, and they made him suck so bad. Like he's a joke character, but yeah, like what happens is like really you know pro players will pick this guy to sort of taunt people.
Right. That's cold blooded. Anyway, anything else to add on this Evo stuff?
Nope. Yeah, it's done by the time this show comes out, and after we're done recording, I'm gonna go back to watching this shit. So
nice. All right. Next up, I got one last story for you guys. I'm kind of putting two together here. PS3 and PSP were the best selling systems of the June quarter. So Sony's console and handheld moved 1.8 million units from April through June, while Xbox 360 only did 1.7, and Wii only did 1.56. So, I don't know how it happened that the PSP outsold both the Xbox and the 360 for the last quarter. I guess they had a price drop in February. They dropped it to $130, but still.
The thing is, like, the PSP has been a strong system this whole time, like, you know, it always surprises me when I hear it. I mean, you know, it's like people are still buying the fucking PSP, but they are.
Yeah.
And especially in Japan, too.
Yeah, that's true, because that Monster Hunter craze over there, they can't stop buying it.
And then the thing is, like, you know, it's just like, I always say this with Sony, it's just, I love their hardware so much, I want to like my PSP, I just don't.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we'll get to the Vita in a minute, but I think that we'll save our Vita discussion. Let's talk about the PS3. So I don't know if this is the first time it's ever happened, but it seems like one of the first times in recent memory that the PS3 has outsold the 360. Traditionally, the 360 has been selling, you know, just a hair over the PS3 for the past few years. And I don't know if this is the first time it's switched out.
In the West.
Oh, sure.
You know, in Japan, it's no contest.
Oh, right. But I think globally, though, is what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Are these numbers global?
You tell me, son. It's your article.
No. <She's a> credit. yeah, these are worldwide, I believe. So, total, I think. I don't know. Well, anyway, I'm sure the numbers aren't you know, drastically different, except that no one buys Xboxes in Japan. Oh, except for Catherine. Now they got Catherine. They can go buy that one.
They can get their weird boo-boo anime block-moving puzzles.
Oh, here, to move on to the Vita. So, now, let me read this news story because, like, I thought that the Vita was confirmed for this fall. And now I'm reading the story that says it was not. It's not sure if it is. I don't remember.
Hang on. I think it was tentatively this fall, but there was no set release date. I don't know.
Let's see.
And it seems like this, you know, I mean, well, you read the article, but
let me see if it has. Okay, well, pulling a William Miller, just glazed over this. So yeah, I guess there's no official date, but there are a couple of rumors out there. Let's see. They said starting at the end of Sony announced that the president they would successively launch the global market starting at the end of 2011. While the electronics giant didn't specify what territories were receiving the handheld first, that plan sounded a lot like the one used for the original PSP, which debuted in Japan in December of 2004, found its way to North America the following March. However, there are indications that Sony might have the PS Vita launched differently. Last month, European retailer Shop2, really? Shop2 posted a November 4th release date for the handheld, a date that still appears on the system's product page. Now a different Sony partner is pegging the system for a 2011 launch.
I
guess the PS3 launched globally. Let's think about Sony's last few releases. Did the PSP Go launch globally all at the same time?
No, I think so.
Let's check.
I could be wrong on that.
Oh, wiki wick. Yes, it did. Oh, no. It launched 1 month later in the U.S.
Okay, yeah, I know it was pretty close.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the Slim, the PS3 Slim, it was either close or it was on the same time for the Slim line. So
yeah, PSP Go is another PSP that I really wanted to like.
It seems like if they're able to stay more on top of their production and, you know, they're doing global marketing, you know, they're trying to push it all at the same time like they have their past couple of things. Mm-hmm. This is a totally viable rumor.
Yeah.
There's people excited about it too, which is the other thing. Unlike the 3DS, which no one.
Yeah, I want a Vita.
It does look good. I don't know if I'm gonna have how much is it? $250?
$250, yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna have $250 by
if I don't buy my 3DS, I'll have some scratch left over to get this bad boy, but like I'm more excited about this than the 3DS. Like there's nothing super revolutionary about it. It's, you know, it's kind of a combination of stuff that we've seen before, like PSP and touchscreen and blah blah blah, but it just seems like a solid portable.
The dual sticks are really selling me. The nice dual sticks.
Yeah, dual sticks, like the touch screens, so you can have touch screen games. This seems like just like an all around good system to me.
I really
want it to work, because I want one, and I want a lot of games for it.
I'm totally out of it on the PS, the Vita, like, because I think we talked about it that first week, and then we just totally forgot about it. Will it play the old PSP games, or not so much?
It doesn't have a UMD drive.
Oh, Lord.
So, no.
Damn it. One day I'm going to finally go back and play those old PSP games.
Well, I still have my PSP sitting around here somewhere. Like, I kind of want to downgrade the firmware and put some homebrew and shit on it. Just put my emulators back on there.
Right.
Because that was the most fun I had with that machine. Like, it ran NES games just so flawlessly. And then, SNES games, a good amount of them.
Yeah, this could potentially be, like, the killer app for emulation, at least. Because you could probably play 64 emulators. I mean, I don't see why you couldn't. I mean, couldn't run even PlayStation emulators. Yeah. I don't even know if they'd make a lot of
them. The thing is, Sony is typically very, very... I don't know, Gestapo as far as their homebrew is concerned. I mean, they squash that flat every chance they get.
Right.
So, I don't know, like, if it was open to that kind of thing, it'll be phenomenal. Just, like, hardware-wise, it seems great. But it's just a question of, will Sony allow that?
Justin Fick, it's getting hot. I gotta take off my shirt. I turned the air off. This Mississippi heat's getting to me.
It's all those spiders.
Dude, they're still swollen under the Band-Aid. Anyway, let's, you got any more news for us, Justin Fick?
No, that's about it for me.
All right, let's hit up releases. Man, I'm gross. Ugh, God. Ugh. Okay, good thing we don't have video yet, or you're just going to be, like, seeing sweaty, gross Blake, like, wiping sweat off himself without a shirt. This week in releases, we've got Pirates of Black Cove. This is a PC DVD-ROM game. Looks terrible. Pirates of the Black Cove will set players in the 16th century in the golden era of pirates and provide them with a chance to become the Pirate King. Oh, yeah. It sounds like a little indie title or something.
I love me some pirate games, but I don't know about this.
Oh, no, this isn't an indie. Well, it might be an indie title, but yeah, it looks kind of like a Tropico sort of knockoff, maybe a little bit. No, maybe RTS. I don't know. Let's move on because we've never heard of it. We got Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, which is coming out on XBLA. It is an independent game being produced by Fuel Cell Games and artist Michael Ganji or something like that. Now, just think, what do you know about this game? I've just seen screenshots that have this weird art style, and that's about as much as I know.
Yeah, it's got that cool like silhouette art style, and it was actually one of the first games that used it. Like after every other game in existence, kind of ripped it off.
Not to be a hater, but yeah, it's sort of a cliche now. The silhouette.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad break, I suppose. But yeah, because this is the first one that used that silhouette style. I was like, man, that looks cool. And then Feist did it, and then Limbo did it, and then I'm sure there's like
even Braid did that to an extent, you know, in some sections.
Yeah, in the very beginning, it had the
beginning, and there was a few like throughout that had some of that. Silhouette style.
The very beginning, you silhouetted. But, I mean, yeah, it looks cool. I'm gonna get it.
Now this might be that you're gonna... Have you taped this week in Bastion, is it, Justin Fick?
It is.
Uh-oh, alright, well then we'll see.
I got some Bastion.
Well, supposedly that's pretty good. This game also, it's been a pretty good XBLA, you know, they've done this promo, I guess, maybe four times now. But I would say this has been, so far, just looking at Shadow Planet and their other releases, it's been a really strong release, or, you know, all the games in it have been good anyways.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this the summer of XBLA, I mean, so far it's, you know, 3 for 3. I mean, assuming that this one is as good as it looks.
You want to take any other? These are all kind
of
lame.
The rest of them look kind of lame. We got Bleach Soul Resurrection. I guess that's supposed to be Resurrection, but it's Resurrection. Fallout New Vegas Lonesome Road DLC. Available in July brings the Courier story full circle when you are contacted by the original Courier 6, a man by the name of Ulysses, who refused to deliver the Platinum Chip at the start of New Vegas.
Bleach Resurrection. That is not a typo. I'm looking at the box art right now.
Is it Resurrection on the box?
Resurrection with a emphasis mark over the O. So, all right.
So it's Resurrection.
Resurrection, I guess.
I don't know.
This looks like trash. Anything with an anime character. And actually, I'm looking at it. It looks kind of cool. The art style anyway, because it's that cell shading, but... Somehow it's in three dimensions, but they actually pull off the cell shading pretty well. Are you seeing this here, Justin Fick?
Let me pull this up. I've seen a couple games around the PS2 era do some cell shading with 3D models. It looks good. Let me pop up
these. But these really look good because they look authentically like, you know, like this might be a picture of a show instead of, you know, they normally kind of look like this is a 3D model that's had some filter applied. And these actually look all right. Nice work, Resurrection. At least. Graphically.
Yeah, it looks... The cell shading here looks really good.
All right. So, anything else on the releases?
Limbo for PS3 and PC. And then... Garbage.
All right. Let's move on to... tapes? Is that what's... It's time for tapes.
Tapes.
All right, Justin Fick, now I hear you got a monster tape for us this week. Lay it on. Right.
So, my monster is, on Wednesday night, this is why I couldn't record a show that night, but I went to the Museum of Modern Art here in New York City.
Okay.
For the arcade exhibit.
Oh, man.
So, dude. this was a one-day-only thing put on by, was it Killscreen? Killscreen magazine. So okay, you know, very very classy gaming magazine.
What is Killscreen? I've never heard of this.
It's a gaming mag, but it's very artsy. It's very, I don't know. It's
like is it like a monthly magazine or?
I don't think it's month. It's online. It's online.
Oh, okay. I see.
I think they do some print ones too, but I love their blog. Like it's sort of like a more artistic take on what's going on in games and
nice.
You know, it's not like, you know, here's all the stuff that's for sale this month.
Right.
So they presented this arcade exhibit and it's three stories of the MoMA, Museum of Modern Art, just all like decked out with different games.
Cool.
So some of them are games that we've kind of seen already. For instance, Limbo was up on the wall. Cannibalt was up there. And okay. 76, you know, some games that are for sale already. Bit Trip Beat was up there.
So was it mostly like indie games or was it all
there? There were some indie games. There were and a lot of like artsy games too. For instance, there was one game that was up on the wall, like right when you come in, called Tentacles. And nice. this is a cool game. So it's
yeah, I played this one. I watched it. I watched this one yesterday.
So this is a game that picture something that looks like Flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like a massive multiplayer Flow.
Hmm.
So it's like this projected game up on the wall, and if you want to play it, you download a free iPhone app. Mm-hmm. And then when you launch the app, a little guy pops in on the wall. I mean, you know, you have to like track down who you are. So there's a little locator button, and it sends like a little pulse so you can see where you are.
Right.
But then you kind of steer your guy around and eat these little things that are like floating around and dodge stuff. And, you know, it's basically cool. Like swim around with other people. And then when you quit, your guy blows up into all like the little pieces that you ate so other people can eat them too.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's a cool little artsy game. And then there was that. There was you ever play that? You ever hear of that game Button?
Yeah. I remember but William Miller was real mad about that game Button. That was an XBLA indie or XB or whatever it's called, an Xbox indie game, right?
It might be on XBLA. I've seen it on Steam.
Okay, what is this then? Maybe I don't know what this is.
So basically, it's Button. It's short for Brutally Unfair Tactics. Totally okay now.
Oh yeah. This is okay. Wait. Before you tell what this is, I just want to preface this by saying me and William Miller invented this game about 10 years ago. And I'm very angry that these guys are in the Museum of Modern Art and probably making money off this stupid idea that we just didn't, because we made it. It's okay. Well, just in fact, describe the game.
Okay, so it's a 4-player game, and like the first time I played it was off Steam, and everybody had one button on an Xbox 360 controller. In the MoMA, they actually had a custom controller that was 4 like giant fucking buttons like daisy chained together on the ground.
Oh wow.
So four players and everyone gets a button, and in the MoMA anyway, you sort of stand in front of your button and the game makes you take a certain number of steps backward.
Okay.
So you take like 10 steps back, and then it makes you do something stupid like dance a jig, strike a ninja pose, or you know, some other modifier. And then it screams some sort of like win condition, you know, like the most basic one is like first one to push their button wins, or, you know, whoever pushes their button loses, or first person to push their button 20 times wins, or whoever has their button pressed at the end of 10 seconds wins.
Right.
Some sort of win condition that you have to read and then go do. And basically then it's just like you run to your button, beat the shit out of each other, push each other over, and just like do all kinds of stupid shit to win.
Right, so the game is not so much like playing it; it's like a physical activity kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Because like just the video and the instructions itself, there's not really much to it, but it's sort of the metagame you're playing as you're playing it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, I played it on Steam and, you know, in someone's apartment, and, you know, it was kind of dull. It relies a lot on it being sort of like a party atmosphere,
right?
And, you know, like we just sort of did it. It's like, okay, who wants to win this time? Right. You know, and you know, you have to play
it
along.
You didn't play it right. All right, let me describe.
We played it right in MoMA though, because that was like a public, you know, like a public atmosphere, tons of people watching. Right. So you know, then you know, now it's sort of like the, you know, the kind of situation where you want to ham it out and go nuts, right. and it was a ton of fun there.
Now, Justin, let me describe to you the game that me and William Miller made back in. This was the year. This is when me and William Miller lived together. This one summer. So this would have been a year after. This would have been summer of 2005, I think.
Okay.
Okay. But the game we made, or really William made it, but we collaborated. There was essentially, because this is when we would just drink and fight all the time. And so you would hold a PlayStation 2 controller. Okay. One person would hold the right trigger. One person would hold the left trigger. Okay. And as soon as, like, and we programmed it in, even with me and William Miller, like, our faces were in it. So when I let go of my button, William Miller's face came on screen. It said, winner. And all we did was just, you would hold the controller, and you would try and beat the other person to let him let go of the controller. And
I think I would have that game on lockdown. I would just do the twist.
Right.
The twist and the yank.
Right. Dude, I don't know. You would think that, because like the key is like you want to get close so you can leverage it out of the other person's hand, right?
Uh-huh.
But they're kicking and punching you is the problem with that.
Oh no, you wouldn't be ready for my twist and my yank. I'm doing fucking tiger style shit on that.
No. See, there's more to it. Anyway, we broke about two controllers playing this game.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'd probably rip a controller like right in half, like the Hulk.
You know, when we played this game, we got two broken controllers out of it. When these guys made this game, they're in the Museum of Modern Art. What the fuck? Goddamn.
But, yeah, so there's a couple more cool games there that we played. There's actually one that was from two guys from Harmonix. They sort of did, like a side project.
Mm-hmm.
So it uses a Kinect and an iPad. It's for two players that play against each other. And basically, the person on the iPad gets a grid. And he can touch places on that on the grid that correspond to places on the screen, which correspond to a person's position in space with a Kinect. So basically, you know, like a song would play and like a line would go across these dots, like, you know, luminous. And the person that was doing the Kinect had to sort of twist their body so their limbs covered all the dots on the screen.
Ah, it's kind of like that old, what is it called? The stupid Japanese show, the Tetris game. Tetris.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. Human Tetris. So, it made you do that. And then, you know, like there's a song playing and then, you know, like the graphics turned you into like a pixel version of yourself, which looked very cool.
That's cool.
So, fun game. There was a version of Quap up on the top floor that I fucking owned first try.
What is Quap? What is this?
So Quap is kind of like a physics game. You get a runner, and the controls are like basically contracting and flexing the muscles in his legs to make him run. So it's kind of a frustrating game when you play it alone. Like you just sort of flop them on the ground and you give up and that's it. But it had a huge crowd at MoMA. Like, you know, so someone would get like, you know, 2 meters off the starting line. People fucking cheer and, you know, people would laugh their ass off if someone like tried to like flail their legs around and, you know, just land on their heads and shit. But so a huge line for this game. And I'm just watching everyone play. I'm like, okay, you know, sort of formulating my strategy, and then I finally get up after like 15 minutes of watching this, and I just go up and I fucking tear this game a new asshole. Just fucking huge applause, like people going fucking crazy. Like that was like my favorite moment of the night. Just like people cheering over my fucking run. I was booking it too.
Oh man, I wish I got in video of this, Justin Fick.
Dude, I was fucking rocking ass, dude.
Like the
personal record. I don't know if it stuck up there for the rest of the night, but. Dude, and that was like my first try up there too. I did that. I got the record. I was like, I'm done. Everyone else took like 15 tries. I did it once. I'm like, I'm done.
Nice.
And then there was actually one more game there that I want to talk about. That was was very fascinating, actually. So one of the designers at NYU, Eric Zimmerman, him and someone else designed a game called Starry Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't a video game at all. This is actually a physical game where the people themselves are playing pieces. And it was, you know, it was played on a giant game board outside that was like maybe 15 feet by 15 feet.
Okay.
And there's a sort of like a bunch of like circle plates that you could stand on that are connected by tape lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then so they sort of formed a board that you can move around on. And basically the object was to kind of like dethrone the leader. There was one leader in the middle. And mm-hmm. basically the way you would do it is the leader would tell you, you know, like what type of square you can move or what type of plate you can move on. So there's three colors, white, black, and gray. So he like all he would do is basically call out a color every turn.
Okay.
And then if there was, you know, like a dot next to you with that color, you can move there. And then after okay. every turn, you can attack someone who's next to you. And if okay. two people team up and attack the same person, they're out. And you sort of get like a, you know, you get like a point.
Hmm.
And if you can get 2 points and then get into the center and attack the leader, you take his position.
Okay.
So it's kind of like this ongoing thing. And then if you're the leader, you have to survive, I think, like 20 turns or something without getting killed.
Hmm. That's cool.
So I actually ended up playing that for like an hour and a half. Really fascinating game. And, you know, it's one that literally anyone can jump in.
Right.
So if you're on the sideline, there's no waiting in line or anything. Like if he just calls if he calls a color and there's a color open on the edge, you can jump on it.
Huh.
And now you're in the game.
That's cool.
So fun little game. Like I ended up playing it like 20 or 30 times. I never killed the leader. I got very close.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's kind of cool. There's a lot of like betrayal that goes on. Like, you know, like I kind of teamed up, you know, on like when you jump in, you team up on other people on the outside to like take people out. But then that same person will fucking murk you at the end to get right. the leader. And
that's cool.
Very, very fun.
Now, Justific, so what's the takeaway from this? I mean, it sort of seems like it's sort of this. The point of this was to try and show maybe not alternative game culture, but maybe I don't know if you call it even an attraction, but sort of crowd based gaming. That's not in the traditional sense of putting in a tape, right?
What would you say? Like that's kind of the one of the impressions that lasted with me is that games can be much more than a single player, you know, like sort of like a solitary experience. I mean, like the whole games as art thing, I think we solved that a long time ago. Hmm. Like that's sort of been proven in my mind. So, I mean, while it might not, you know, maybe that's what that proved for people who are much more mainstream and don't play games as often. You know, maybe that was their takeaways that games can be art.
It's strange that you mention this because I just spent all weekend cataloging this new kind of game that, okay, maybe it's not really a game, but it's a new kind of game that I've been researching. I like to call them drunk games. And they're games that you can play with groups of like 5 to 10 people when you're drinking and everybody's hammered. And the more hammered they are, the better the games are.
Okay.
But just to give you an example, I've found about 5 or 6 of these. But here's just a simple one. It's called the Apple Game. And here's what
Apple
you do.
Game?
You know, and most of these are designed to be played like in a kitchen because you're probably drinking in a kitchen.
Okay.
At least I do a lot. Because, like I'm going to take it to the living room? No. But the apple game works by you get an apple, okay, then everybody gets a fork. And it works between, like, you know, I think 5 would be about the minimum, but you could play it up to, I guess, 30 or whatever. 5 to 10, though, seems about right. So you get an apple, and then you throw it across the room, and somebody tries to catch it with a fork, okay? Now that the fork is in the apple, you now throw the apple with your fork in it to another person in the circle, and they try and catch it. And the goal of the game is to see how many forks you can get in the apple before the apple just disintegrates. Our high score was 7.
Nice. I was going to say, like, after the first 2 or 3, like, if they're placed badly, that can fucking
Oh, yeah, after the first
tricky.
Couple misses, you know, it starts going downhill fast. But, yeah, it's even that, I mean, it sounds stupid, but it's sort of the same thing, right, of, like, Okay, maybe that's not a video game, but how is it so different? Just like the master, what was it called? You called the one you stood on the circles?
Starry Heaven.
Right, Starry Heaven. I mean, they're not so different, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of these games were sort of in that gray area between, you know, a pure video game and, I guess, a traditional game, I guess would be the...
Yeah, but it seems like it's, I mean, the like, thing, you know, the some, thing I think is different like, is that like adults can play these. It seems like kids have games like hopscotch, right? And then like once you get about 10 years old, maybe you play video games, but you don't play games with other people, really, that aren't. Maybe you play card games, you know, God no, dude, I got smoked in spades. but you know, I don't know, maybe is this maybe it's not a new thing. Maybe it's just a new thing to you and me, but adult games.
I think adults are kind of letting loose and having fun with these a lot more than they used to. I mean,
maybe so.
Like the 30 somethings now, I mean, you know, like, you know, people between, say, like your age and my age are people who all grew up with the video game system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up with a Nintendo. And I mean, even like maybe like a couple of years before me grew up with Atari. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everyone has had games as a constant part of their life. So, I mean, they're much more willing to become a game piece in this game and, you know, and play these kinds of games. So, I mean, I think, you know, like it's not just a kid's thing anymore. You know, sure. Like,
and, you know, even to an extent, like sort of flash mobs are sort of the same thing in a way, if you think about it, right? You know, it's sort of, maybe it's not a video game, but it's this activity that grown people who normally would not do this kind of silly childhood antics are now getting into, and you know, more and more.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing too is, you know, some of these games are a way to kind of get people socializing and get them talking to each other. I mean, people sort of looked at games as this very antisocial thing for about two decades.
Right.
And, you know, they still kind of do, like when you talk about Xbox games and such. But, you know, like two of these games, Starry Heaven and Button, you know, both got people, you know, sort of talking to people that, you know, that, you know, sort of, they, it kind of breaks the ice for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for instance, in Button, I was there with Steve Zay from Freeverse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the two of us faced off against two strangers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of got people pushing each other and, you know, sort of touching and making contact, you know. With
and that next thing you knew, you and Steve were fucking. It was weird.
Yeah. And then I went home with, like, spider bites and But, yeah, and then in Starry Heaven, you're like, you know, you're conspiring with total strangers. And to attack someone, you have to reach out and touch them.
Right.
So, you know, it's this human contact that it's kind of forcing you to do to play the game. It's, you know, it's, and it does get you talking to people. It gets you remembering people, you know, just sort of getting out there and socializing gamers who are typically very introverted.
Justific, are you telling me there's a way to socialize with people besides drinking?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And besides Xbox Live, it blew my mind, too.
This is groundbreaking. I can't believe this. All right. Let's see. So, is that all you got to say on that? You got anything else you want to add to it?
That's all I got on that, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. We're getting a little long here, so I'll do mine pretty quick. I'll go ahead and do both mine back-to-back because they're kind of short. I played Stacking, which is an XBLA release by, what's it called, Double Fine. And I didn't really understand this game when I started playing. I didn't really like the demo because it was, I don't know, I was probably drinking, I mean socializing when I was, but I finally, it went on sale or something, I finally tried it out. Really good game. You play as a Russian stacking doll, and you start as a little boy, you're very small, and you take over other, you jump inside of other Russian dolls, but only if they're facing away. Like, if they're facing towards you, you can't jump into them, right? So some of them you have to sneak up on, others you have to kind of trick with, because each of the stacking dolls has a button you can press, or they have basically one attack or ability. And so for, like, some of them, it's like they hold up an umbrella and twirl and it's silly. Some of them are important, like, there's one, I don't want to say, a countess, let's say, attractive, a sultry countess, and you hit the A button on her, she kind of shakes her hips around, right? And then you can lure other stacking dolls away from places, you know? So it's sort of a adventure game slash puzzle game using these stacking dolls. It's all very bizarre, very cool. I totally loved it. It may be a little on the short side, but I think $10 on XBLA. And if you're just looking for something to play, certainly if you're looking for something to play with like a girlfriend or a younger kid, stacking is an excellent option. So thumbs up.
Yeah, I've played a little bit of this, and I like it a lot. I mean, it's got a cool style. It's got, you know, it's got a lot of references to like hobo culture, which is always funny.
Oh yeah, right. And it's got the unlockables too. So there's length to it. So check that one out. The other tape I got for you this week is Atari Greatest Hits. Now I didn't know what this was. I found it on the iPhone. And because I was really jonesing to play Centipede on my phone, so I was like, I'm going to get this tape. So it's free to get, and you can play demos of each of the games, but then after that, they charge you for each of the games you want to buy. Now, it sounds like a bad deal, you know, because it's like, oh, fuck, I want to play Centipede now, I got to buy a Centipede. Well, you can buy all of them, which is like 100 games, for $15. A little steep, but at the same time...
It's steep for the iPhone, but if you think about on XBLA, those probably would have been released one at a time for $5.
And not only that, but it's like, oh, hey...
In fact, they kind of have been. Like, Centipede's up there for $5. Missile Command's up there for $5.
It's like all of Atari's classic arcade games, like, you know, Missile Command, Centipede, Millipede, you know, Crystal Castles, just every, I mean, the whole library. Not only that, you get, like, Atari 2600 games on there. There's a ton of stuff. And if nothing else, it's interesting because they have a little, like, you can hit one of the buttons that gives you a little history on the game, and it'll show you some flyers of, you know, like, when... You know, back in the day, they used to distribute flyers to people that owned arcades to decide what games they were going to pick. And it's cool going back and sort of looking through this culture of like, hey, I wonder, you know, how they tried to sell Centipede. And it's interesting from a historical perspective. Gameplay wise, it's pretty good. You know, when you're playing Centipede, they got the trackball on screen. And so you kind of roll it. And it works pretty well. You know, they're trying to, I like it better than the virtual D-pad. But at the same time, you know, it's not. Near, like we were talking last week, it's not near as good as the real thing or even a mouse on the computer, but Centipede was never designed to be played with a mouse anyway.
Now, Blade Buck, you ever heard of the iCade?
I have. That's where I heard about this thing and saw it through there. Well, okay. Describe to our listeners what this is, Justin Fitz.
So the iCade, if you have an iPad, you can buy the iCade for, I believe it's $100 or it might be $150. I'm not sure.
Something like that.
It's basically an iPad-sized arcade cabinet that you slide your iPad into as the screen, and it has a joystick, and I think it's got 8 buttons on it.
Yeah, I do not think it has a trackball, though, which is
does not have a trackball.
Considering this is kind of for purists, a little disappointing, but okay.
Yeah. And I do know a lot of iPhone developers are adding in support for the iCade into their games, and I know when I port Kung Fu Kill Force to iOS... I totally want to add support for this too. So it's nice. It's hot, but it also has support.
And hey, just
for
from a sales standpoint too. If there's only a handful of games that are doing that, and your game can,
yeah,
I mean, not just you, but anybody, right? I mean, that's if you got one of these iCade things, you want to buy more games on it.
Yep. So, the whole Atari Classic Pack is compatible with this thing.
Yeah, so definitely if you're looking at... Or, you know what? We've been talking about classic games. If you just want a taste of some of these old games, you know, if you're like, what is Centipede? Go and download just the little free thing. I think you can play demos of each game and just give it a go. It's awesome. Get some old school on your phone. Anyway, Justin Fick, you got one more tape for us, right?
I got one more. It's our first Summer of Arcade title, Bastion.
Uh-oh.
So we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, and I said I was interested, so I went and got it.
Okay.
And thumbs up on this. I like it a lot. So it's kind of like it's a little bit Diablo, little bit Zelda kind of thing. It's it gives you like an isometric world, and you're this little guy walking around, and you get like a bunch of different weapons you can carry around, and you just basically kill dudes. And you have to go and collect these cores at the end of every world, and that sort of adds a new building onto the bastion that you can build, and you can build like different shops and stuff. There's not a whole lot of exploration to it, really. It's it's got sort of like a world map, kind of like Castlevania Order of Ecclesia. Like it's just got a bunch of icons. You pick one. And that drops you into this isometric world. You can run around like Diablo. It's not procedurally generated. So it's all set levels.
Well, and not to bag on procedurally generated levels, but sometimes, you know, those end up feeling very generic after a while.
Yeah. So it's not always. You kind of have to do them good enough. You still have to have enough variety in it so it doesn't become completely repetitive.
Right.
But, the weapons are all fun to use. There's everything from like swords and hammers to guns and grenades and, It's fun to play around. Like it's got a bunch of levels for that are just meant for a certain weapon to sort of like test your abilities with it. It's very cool. I think I'm about like halfway through and I like it a lot.
Now I remember one of the selling points they had on this game was that there's some sort of like narrator who narrates everything that happens. Does that come off as cool or is it cheesy and contrived?
Comes off as cool.
Okay.
So it starts off right away. You know, like you hit begin game and there's no prompts or anything. Just the narrator sort of begins talking and then it, you know, sort of holds on a part of, you know, on a screen of you just on a bed in a floating rock in the middle of nowhere. And then you as soon as you hit anything on the controller, your little guy wakes up and the narrator says like, you know, and then the kid wakes up and explores around and then like the whole world starts like building itself around you as you.
Yeah, I've watched a few minutes of this. It looks very, very cool. The art style, it's very out there. I love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, the narrator never gets old. It's got a... It has a couple different lines every time you do something. Like, I know I tried a couple of those, they're called the Proving Grounds, where you have to use a certain weapon, but I tried it a couple times, and he says something different every time.
Nice.
So it doesn't get old or tired. He's maybe repeated himself like I don't know. I'm trying to think if he's repeated himself at all.
Well, still, it's got a lot of original content.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, it's got a lot of original content. It's a cool voice. And then you know, just the. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you ever watched Firefly, the shepherd from Firefly. He kind of sounds like that guy.
It might be, because I think he's done game voices for, he did a game voice for Halo 3, I believe. Nathan Fillion, is that who you're talking about?
No, this is the black guy. I don't know.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant, I'm confusing.
But no, this is, the guy that did this voice, I think it's just one of the guys from the company that made the game. I don't think he's a voice actor at all. I think he's just a dude.
The dude,
just like one of their programmers or something. Just like someone who works in their office.
Hmm.
Just did their voice. Has a great voice. Sounds very cool. Just like you know, and like his voice and the soundtrack together. It's got sort of like that rustic, kind of like frontierish music. Does make it feel a lot like Firefly.
Cool.
So it's a cool game. It's not particularly challenging, I've found. It's pretty automatic. You know, I just sort of waltz through and just kill shit, and then you know keep killing shit, and then but it's enjoyable. Like I don't find myself being drained playing it. Like it's very easy to play. It's very you know, but it's very well done and fun.
Cool. And that'll segue easily, just because I do have a Jank of the Week for us into the Jank of the Week. Actually, Gregory, let's not. Can you? I'm sorry to do this. I'll just add this onto this because it's very short. But I think this deal is going on right now for Bastion, and they did it last week for Miss Explosion Man. So it wouldn't surprise me this podcast will come out when I guess Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet is out.
Yeah, that and From Dust.
If you buy Bastion or perhaps whatever current XBLA Summer of Arcade game is out that week, if you buy it on their online store. Like from Xbox.com, you can get The Maw for free, which is a twisted pixel game.
Oh, nice.
So if you just Google this deal, you can see maybe it won't be running, then maybe it will. It's currently running with Bastion and The Maw. So you could do a little Googling, see if you can get you some savings.
Okay. Well, I mean, the other one, too, that I mean, I'm sure everyone knows about this, is if you buy all five Summer of Arcade games, you'll get there'll be a sixth one that'll come out that you'll get for free.
Nice.
So,
check it out. Let's go on to feedback. dude, I'm sweating. Oh my god.
Time to take the pants off too, Blake Buck.
I almost did earlier, and I said no, because I'm not doing this naked. All right, this is from Hayoshiro.
All right, Hayoshiro writes, this one is some slight vindication for Blake.
Uh-oh.
So this is a link to Phil Harrison discusses new Xbox PS4. He has a quote from it. Phil Harrison, former head of Sony Worldwide Studios. The technology to stream high-quality games directly to your living room or computer or TV is not some kind of science fiction fantasy. It works, and it'll only get better over time. I think that's clearly going to be a future for our industry. Blake Smart.
Yeah, I think he's right, because the subject of this is On Live. I think he's talking about how I clearly, like a year ago, said On Live was the future of video games, and William Miller still shits on me till today. Here's another industry expert who says the same thing as Blake. Okay. You're welcome. But, what? Good. Blake Smart. Excellent. Need more of those emails. This is from Calyx. It says, greetings, masters of gaming, emperors of Norrath, and all-around sexy men. So he's actually, let me read this, and then I don't know if we should put it on the air or not.
But. He started it off well. This is how you start off an email to us.
I'm offering to provide you with content for the BDPE front page, spawned forth from the inane ramblings of my own mind. A series of articles that will chronicle my thought process as an industry outsider, someone who has no practical experience with game design. This will be a journal of my ideas and hopefully projects that will be passed through legend and myth, and that hopefully won't end with me floundering around directionless. Enclosed is a small sliver of what I hope to achieve, the essence of my vision, nay, a shard of my very soul. It is also known as an elevator pitch. Your humble manservant, Calyx. I really should have read this before now.
Well, this has actually been something that Calyx sent me a while ago, and I keep forgetting to bring it up on the show, but he's offered to essentially, I guess, you know, sort of work through the process of a game design and sort of chronicle his misadventures on the front page. I told him to write up a first article.
Pass the book to Blake. I see what you did there.
That's exactly what I did. Because he wrote me back, you know, like a day ago. I'm like, yeah, you know, send that to me again and CC Blake Buck on this.
You asshole.
So I don't know. It's like
I read his little synopsis here. It seems like a great idea. So
I think it's cool.
You know what? Go ahead. And if it sucks, we won't run it. Or if it sucks, we will. Because
I know there's we have a couple listeners too that know. Like I think TK Make Game was a Tumblr or something that he started up too.
Yeah. You know what? If any of you guys just want to give us free shit, we won't turn it away. We won't. So donate at bestdamnpodcastever.com. That's our PayPal. Just, you send in the checks too, whatever you want. But yeah, if anybody has any ideas, we'll see how this goes with Calyx. It sounds like a good idea. Anybody else wants to, got any ideas for stuff? Because we don't update the web. I mean, it's such a hassle to do this show as it is. Are you kidding me?
it's such a hassle to think of content and write it and post it. Yeah. I think it's cool. I mean, I say write in a first article and we'll give it a read through and then put it up. And if people like it, we'll keep on doing it.
All right. So now it's time for voicemails.
Hey guys, it's KG. I want to disagree with you guys on the reason why PopCap is so valuable. It's because of their user database. Every time you go on Facebook and play Bejeweled Blitz, they, when you want to play it, they have to, it'll say, click here to give us access to your Facebook.
Well, that's probably part of it.
I can totally see that.
Well, at the same time, not all PopCap games, because PopCap, they're on the phone. They're like actually on, PC, not just through Facebook. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's probably not the total reason, but sure, I can see that anyway.
Information. And that's why they're worth $700 million or whatever.
Because that shit is valuable.
Right.
Dollars or whatever. Oh shit, I went down the wrong. Yeah, I gotta call you back. I took a wrong turn. Thanks, assholes. Bye.
Oh, excellent. Take that.
That's what you get for proving us wrong in the best damn podcast ever.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that about does it for this week of the best damn podcast ever. What do you think about that, Justin Fitz?
That was a good show, Blake Buck. Damn, long show, too.
Yeah. If you got any feedback.
Another 90-minute monster.
I don't know. Good Lord. But look, you know what? We're sorry. You know, we're going to start charging a little more for this show. Double nothing. Two times nothing.
Two nothings is nothing.
If you'd like to give us any feedback, it's feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call the listener line, though not when you're in your car trying to drive. It's 845-BATTLE-9 is the number to dial.
Hold on, I gotta land my plane now, you assholes. I've got to put my landing gear down because of you guys.
And from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Justin Fig.
And we'll see you next time.
And that does it for this show. Boom.
I was saving it just for you, Justin.
My heart was hoping that it was coming.